This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
And your text will be read throughout the show, so feel free to get in on the show. I have a few gigs. I got a few jobs. One of them is I work at a comedy club. And I was working at said comedy club last night, and probably shouldn't have been, but I was watching the Cubs game on my phone. And I looked up at the stage for 1 second. The Cubs were winning. The Cubs were winning the game. And I looked up at the stage of the comedy club I work at for 1 second, seemingly, and I looked back down at my phone, and suddenly they were losing. Suddenly a 4-run lead turned into a 10-6 deficit in that game last night. And many of you might have had a very similar experience. You got up to go to the bathroom or go grab something from the fridge, and you came back, and it was a completely different ball game as the Diamondbacks just opened the floodgates on the Cubs in the seventh, but especially in the eighth inning. An 8-run eighth inning for the D-backs to take that lead yesterday and never look back. And it started, like I said, in the seventh with Nate Pearson having trouble getting runners or getting batters out. And then it continued in the eighth inning with Caleb Thielbar, struggling to get batters out. And then Eli Morgan had his own problems. And that's when the dam really busted open for that Cubs bullpen. And now you look at what happened last night. Three relievers combined to allow 8 runs in the eighth inning. Again, turned a 4-run lead into a 4-run deficit as quick as I could look away from the game and then look back. Pearson is really struggling now. Hasn't had a clean outing yet. He's worked 3 1/3 innings, 6 runs, 4 walks, only 2 strikeouts. Every hit he's given up seemingly has been well struck. Like, he is not missing bats at all at this point. And this was after, really, I thought, and maybe you didn't. Maybe you saw this coming, and you can let me know at 312-644-6767. But I was feeling pretty good about this Cubs bullpen coming into the season. After last year, they find Tyson Miller, they find Porter Hodge, they find Pearson sort of as the season is going. They steady the ship. Then in the offseason, and again, I'm not saying that all of these were home run signings, pun not intended. I'm not saying these were all guys that I was fist pumping and celebrating that the Cubs went and signed. But as far as relief pitchers, as far as bullpen pitchers go, there aren't that many that come with that sort of star power where you're like, oh yeah, we got that guy. But quite honestly, one of the few guys who moved in the offseason, as far as bullpen arms go, that did have some name value to him was Ryan Pressly. This was a guy who came over with a lot of success as a closer and a lot of postseason success as a closer. I think the most playoff saves ever, if I'm not mistaken. I remember hearing that stat when the Cubs traded for him. They get him from the Astros. They also bring in Thielbar. They also bring in Colin Ray. They also bring in Eli Morgan, Brad Keller. Brazier came over in the trade from the Dodgers. And I was like, okay, all right. None of this is knocking my socks off. Presley maybe knocked my socks off as much as a reliever or a closer was going to this offseason. But I was like, all right, cool. The bullpen seems to be settled. I didn't love what they did with the lineup, but I was like, the bullpen seems to be pretty good. And now, after yesterday and the troubles that they had prior to yesterday, I mentioned Nate Pearson hasn't had a clean outing yet. Ryan Presley is supposed to be sort of the rock at the back end of that bullpen. He's now worked three innings. He's walked four. He's given up six hits and three runs, and he has just one strikeout. Pearson is wobbly. Morgan and Thielbar have had mixed results, and overall, this Cubs bullpen has an 8.34 ERA with nearly as many walks as strikeouts. 19 walks, 23 strikeouts in just short of 23 innings in the six games that they've played so far. And that felt a lot like what we saw last year. Just like what I said about the offense after opening the season in Japan with the Dodgers, that felt a lot like what we saw last year. And this was one phase of the Cubs that I thought they had fixed, or at least put a Band-Aid on. But here we are. The Cubs bullpen is an issue once again. And I want to know why you think that is, how to fix it, and what if they don't? 312-644-6767. Let me start with the why. First thing I look at when a bullpen is struggling, and a bullpen that I expect to perform at a certain level, one of the things I look at, one of the first things I look at, is how a manager handles a bullpen. And I got to be honest with you. While I'm a big Craig Counsell guy, and when they brought him over from Milwaukee, I love the move. And for those of you who don't know, I spent a lot of time working in Milwaukee. Basically, the entirety of Craig Counsell's tenure as the Milwaukee Brewers manager. So I've seen this guy call some games and push some buttons and pull some strings. And I still am of the belief that Craig Counsell handles a pitching staff, handles a bullpen as well, if not better, than any manager in Major League Baseball when he has the arms. And I was watching that game yesterday, and when Pearson had the inning that he had in the sixth, when he brought him back out for the seventh, I was like, what? Really? We're really doing this? Because not only were the Diamondbacks getting on base and scratched across two runs on three hits, he couldn't find the strike zone, and when he did, everything seemed to be getting hit hard, which has been, as I already said, that's been the case with Pearson so far this season in his three appearances. Everything seems to be getting hit hard out of that guy's hand. And then following that, so he brings Thielbar in the seventh when Pearson stumbles again, and Thielbar somehow gets out of the seventh, minimizing damage, and they bring him out for the eighth. And I was like, what are we doing here? And then, like I said, floodgates just opened on Eli Morgan. Six hits, six runs, all of them earned, and one walk. So I didn't love bringing either of those guys back out for another inning after they scuffled and really were kind of lucky to get out of the innings that they pitched, talking about Pearson and Thielbar. But then I thought about it some more, and again, I'm a Craig Counsell backer, and especially his handling of bullpens and pitching staffs. I'm a believer of his. And I thought, why would Craig Counsell do this? And we do have to remember that this is a really, really odd start to the season, for especially for the Cubs pitching staff, but for the team as a whole. And it's one of the reasons I was against the whole Tokyo trip. I did not like it, and one of the biggest reasons was what this is going to do to guys' routines, and especially pitchers' routines, as they try to get stretched out for the regular season. And I think Craig Counsell is looking at his bullpen, and even when Pearson has the type of inning that he has, or even when Thielbar has the type of inning that he has, he feels like he needs to get every pitch out of every guy that he can, because a lot of his starters aren't stretched out yet, and that's the thing you have to watch out for the most. Matthew Boyd was very good yesterday. So that's the silver lining in that loss. Five innings, four hits, no runs, and struck out five
walked three.
So the bullpen is going to have to pick up some of that load that the starting pitchers can't, and I think Craig Counsell is going to try and get every last drop out of his bullpen pitchers before he goes to the next bullpen pitcher as he tries to manage the pitches and the innings for everybody on this staff. But again, he especially has to watch those starters and their innings. The bullpen arms, they have a few that have some options and will be sent to the minors and called back up to have more fresh and healthy arms throughout the season. So that's what I'll chalk up Craig Counsell's questionable handling of the bullpen yesterday too. And to a degree, that's also what I'll chalk up some of this performance or lack thereof when it comes to the Cubs bullpen. These guys are still finding their footing. These guys are still getting stretched out after a weird spring training that was interrupted for a weird opening series in Tokyo. I'm going to give this bullpen, because I did have some belief in what Jed Hoyer did to bolster that bullpen in the offseason, I'm going to give them some benefit of the doubt that's why we're seeing these struggles early on. They're still trying to find their footing. But if that's not the case, we got some real problems here. Because if they do not fix, if that bullpen does not get things turned around, this is going to look a lot like last year once again. And we all know 26 blown saves for this bullpen last year. Probably one of, if not the main reason that this baseball team was watching playoff baseball with the rest of us. And there is a possibility that even though those guys they brought in are pretty good, have pretty good track records, have pretty good arms, you hear Jed Hoyer and GMs around this league all the time talk about how volatile bullpens are, how volatile relief pitchers and their arms can be, and guys will have pop-up years and be great, and guys will have years where they fall off the map completely. It is a possibility that for as good as that bullpen looked coming into the year, that volatility works against the Cubs. I don't know that you necessarily blame Jed Hoyer for that. I don't even know that you can blame the Ricketts and their lack of spending on that, or for that, I should say. But that is a real possibility, that even if they put together a good bullpen, that good bullpen is blowing up right in front of their eyes to start the season. Way too early to say that, but that's a possibility when you think about the nature of bullpens in this league. Let me get in one quick call before I hit the break. Let's go to John from Northern Indiana. He wants to talk about that Cubs bullpen. John, you're on the score. What's up, buddy?
Hey, just a quick question. You caught on my thing at the end there of Cubs spending. Here's the thing with the bullpen. Pressler's, what is it? His velocity has been down a couple miles an hour over the last year and a half.
Yeah.
And another big problem is, okay, look at any good Cubs teams in the past. They went out and spent money on closers. And I get it's a volatile position. But you got a guy like Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, guys out there that the Cubs could have had, and they just go cheap in this position. Well, they go cheap everywhere, but this position, they go cheap. And then they wonder, and they patch it in with projects and projects and projects, and then it blows up in their face, and they wonder why. What does it hurt to spend, you know, X amount of million on, Hader last year, or try to go for Tanner Scott or Yates? Go for the arms. Okay, what's the worst that could happen? You got a couple of guys that fail as opposed to having five or six projects fail on you? I mean, you at least know that. Why don't we ever get pitchers that have velocity? I mean, we don't build anything from our minor leagues, and we never go after guys that throw hard.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast.
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They did. I appreciate the call. They did, and I know this is ancient history at this point. They got a guy with some velocity in Aroldis Chapman, and he was getting paid a pretty penny to be the closer. I know this is a different era of Cubs baseball, and Theo ain't here no more. And hey, I wanted Josh Hader. I wanted them to get in on Josh Hader a few years ago, and we can revisit that if you want. But I'm talking about what they did in this last offseason, and Tanner Scott was out there, but Ryan Pressly is not. You could do a lot worse in terms of going out and getting a closer or an arm for your. You could do a lot worse than a guy who has as many saves in the postseason as anybody in this league. And I've heard some people, well, why was he available? Because they got Josh Hader. Because they got the best closer in the game. That's no knock on Ryan Pressly. As if I could have Josh Hader, any closer I have is getting benched. And bottom line is, he didn't like or really work out that well in the setup role.
But look what Milwaukee's done. You had Devin Williams, and you got that Tyler. Like, they just keep popping guys out that throw hard and succeed.
John, I appreciate the call, man. Good stuff. The Brewers do a really good job. And I mean, the Cubs should do as good of a job, and maybe they will after bringing over counsel, and they've poached a few other people over from that Brewers organization as far as the scouting and developmental staff. I hope the Cubs get as good as the Brewers are at finding and developing arms and getting a few more miles per hour out of those arms. They do as good a job of it as anybody in baseball. I want the Cubs to be that good at that. They're not. They're not right now. They found Devin Williams. They found Josh Hader. Well, they traded for Josh Hader when he was in the Astros minor league system. But they do as good a job of really, really getting the most out of their pitchers that they can. Developing those guys, like I said, getting a few more miles per hour out of their arms. They're a very good organization when it comes to developing pitching. Cubs haven't been as good, and they need to be. We'll hit a quick break. Plenty more Cubs talk to come throughout the show, including Evan Altman from Cubs Insider will be here at 7:20. But want to talk some Bears, talk some draft with Clay Harbor, CHSN Bears analyst, 9-year NFL vet, joins me, Rami Makhlouf, right after this on the Score Evening Show. That's me with you till about 8:30, taking you right up to pregame as the Cubs take on the A's right here on the Score. I was talking Cubs just last segment. And speaking of the Cubs, join Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi at Sluggers in Wrigleyville as they broadcast live from 10 to 12:45 before the home opener on the north side. Zach Zaidman will then have the pregame show right up until first pitch. It's all brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois, sports betting the way that it should be. Speaking of Circus Sports, joining us now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download that Circus Sports app today. You see him on CHSN breaking down all the Bears news, 9-year NFL veteran. Always a pleasure to talk with Clay Harbor. Clay, how are you this evening, my man?
Oh, I'm doing great. Love getting the interviews and the news out of the owners' meetings over there. But awesome day here in Chicago. Sun's out. Can't complain.
You know, I do want to ask you about the Bears, obviously. That's the main reason why you're here. But the big talk out of those owner meetings that you just referenced is this proposal to ban the tush push, among the many rules proposal changes that are on the table at the owners' meetings this year. How do you feel about that, Clay? I'm going to talk about it a little later in the show, and just me in a nutshell. I don't like it. It rubs me the wrong way that you're trying to ban something just because you can't stop it.
We are of like mind. I don't like it. And I'm not just saying that because the Philadelphia Eagles were the team that drafted me back in 2010 in the fourth round. But I don't like it because a lot of other teams have tried to run this play and they can't run it. A lot of teams can't run this play, not because of the play, but because their quarterback doesn't squat 600 pounds and isn't as talented and isn't as strong and isn't as physical as a guy like, say, Jalen Hurts, and doesn't have the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line. So to me, it doesn't feel like it's a problem because the data has come out and there's no extra injury risk on the play.
Right.
They've done it over and over again. To me, it's teams can't run it and they don't like that. So they don't want the Eagles to run it because they are so good at it. So they're trying to get it banned. So me as a competitor, you figure out how to stop it. You figure out how to do it. You don't complain and try to change the rules. So I don't like it either.
And quite frankly, Clay, not just the fact that they're trying to ban it, but the way that they're sort of hiding behind player safety, like you just said, even though there is no data to support that argument, it's disingenuous, and I feel like hiding behind player safety is that's dirty pool. You know what? When talking about negotiations and all these rules changes, that feels like dirty pool to me to try and hide behind player safety on an issue like this when you have nothing to back that up.
Oh, man, it's kind of cowardly almost.
Yes.
I mean, if you want to ban it because you don't like the play, you can't run it. You've tried to run it. It's something you can't do successful. Just go out there and say it. Like, I don't like this play because the Eagles are the only team that can do it. Don't hide behind, like you said, the player safety rule. And we all know that there's no data to support that. And for me, like, I've been seeing these coaches come out and say it. And a lot of these coaches are coaching teams that have tried to run the tush push or some variant of it and haven't been successful in doing it. So now they're not running anymore. Now all of a sudden it's a player safety issue. So like mind as well on this issue, at least say you don't like the play. Don't try to blame it on the player safety.
Clay Harbor, 9-year NFL vet, CHSN Bears analyst, my guest here on the Score Evening Show. All right, let's get into the Bears and this draft coming up here. Man, it's sneaking up on us. Just over 3 weeks, Clay, and it feels like it's been a very long offseason with all the moves that the Bears have made via trade and then free agency. Was there one spot where you were like, they have to draft that position before they made all the moves? And has that changed with all the moves that they did make, sort of opening up the draft board in your eyes?
Yeah, obviously the interior offensive line was a concern. And I wanted a center, just as a football player, knowing all the things that centers can do to take some things off the quarterback's plate, especially a rookie quarterback, and then getting Drew Dahlman, who was the prize center of this class. And basically because of his intelligence and knowing when you have a strong, a veteran, a intelligent center in the huddle, how much that helps not only the whole offensive line because the calls start with the center, but your quarterback. The center can come out and point out the mic. He can change the protection. He can shift the mic over to pick up a protection. So if, say, Caleb Williams doesn't see something, now the center can. And that goes all the way out to help the tight end because the communication there. But obviously not over the center. I love the Joe Tooney signing. Jonah Jackson, I think, is a little risky with his injury history. I mean, he's a guy that's only played in 29 of his last 51 games. When he's healthy, I think he's great, but he's got less starts in the last 51 games than, say, Tevin Jenkins. So giving him that big contract was a little worrisome, but maybe he can stay healthy. Ben Johnson knows him. And then Joe Tooney. This guy was actually my former roommate when I had a cup of coffee out in New England with the Patriots. Oh. And you talk about intelligence as well. Tooney was just an extremely intelligent guy. I remember studying plays. I'm coming to New England. It's my seventh, eighth year in the NFL at this point. This guy's a rookie. We just drafted him out of North Carolina State. The third round pick, not a highly touted guy. And I just remember studying plays. You know, you come back with your buddies. Our third roommate there was Ted Karras, who's still an offensive lineman in the league as well. And we'd all throw plays at each other. And I remember just being taken aback at how quickly Tooney had picked up this offense, knowing how complex the Patriots system was. And I've been in so many systems at this point,
and that I couldn't even keep up with this kid, how he learned it so quick. And he ended up starting for that team that eventually won the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, myself got cut after six games, and I didn't get a ring. So waiting for mine in the mail, Bill, thanks a lot. But overall, the intelligence that they brought on that interior offensive line and stabilizing that was great.
What kind of roommate was he? Did he wash his own dishes? Did he pick up his underwear in the bathroom? What kind of roommate are we talking about with Joe Tooney?
Oh, man, he was a good roommate. It was a huge house in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, I think it was. I mean, all those states are so close there. But, yeah, North Attleboro, we had a cleaning lady. So, fortunately, when you live with offensive linemen, you have to make sure you have a cleaning lady, because old linemen aren't known for being the neatest of guys. But Tooney was a great roommate, man, good guy. Always practice early, sleep early. You don't have to worry about him playing music or something when you're trying to go to bed. But just a good, genuine dude and extremely intelligent and a hardworking guy. Quiet, but hardworking, and is going to get the job done.
You know, you mentioned you thought that Jonah Jackson was a risky signing. To me, the guys that are kind of risky are the two signings that they made on the defensive side of the ball in Grady Jackson, just at his age and less than 2 years removed from a torn ACL. And you look at his production in terms of rushing the quarterback, it's gone down the last years. Love what he brings in terms of the locker room presence and the culture. And then Dayo Odegbo, it seems like they signed this guy more on potential and measurements and tools than they did on what he's done at the NFL level. What did you think of those two signings?
Man, you are right on, absolutely right there. Grady Jarrett, I like him as a signing.
I think
signing,
I said Grady Jackson. I'm sorry. I keep doing that. No, it's Grady Jarrett. My bad.
Chicago knew what you meant. Grady Jarrett, I think if you come in and think he's going to be the guy he was 5, 6, 7 years ago, the former Pro Bowler, you're going to be disappointed. But if you realize this is going to be a veteran, a guy that's done it, that's seen it, that has a great routine, that's going to help Jervon Dexter, that's going to help Zach Pickens, that's going to help some of these young guys reach their full potential just off of all the experience he has with his routine, his film study, his weight room, then you got to take it like that. He's going to be a guy that knows what he's doing. He's going to get solid, maybe a little pressure. He's going to know how to stop the run. He's not going to put up big numbers. He's aging. You might get 2 solid years out of him, but he will be a great presence in that locker room. And I think that was something that the Bears needed. And then, like you said, Dayo Odegbo, he's a guy that watching his tape, he's a big, strong edge setter, guy strong in the run game. He had 8 sacks a couple of years ago. Most of those were actually from inside when he's a 5 technique. What I like about him is you can move him all across the front. But when I'm watching him as a tight end, he's not a guy you're going to have to really game plan for, just wrecking the game, rushing the passer from the edge. He's not a guy that coming and I go, okay, we're going to just be chipping this guy all day to give our tackle help. Or they're going to be keeping us in to help on protection because we're playing against Dayo Odegbo. No, he's a guy that will cause you headaches because he's very multiple in different fronts. He can play a 5 technique. He can move down, maybe even a 3 technique here and there in a NASCAR package. But you are correct. I think the Bears still need to invest. I don't know if it's in the first round. I don't know if it's in with 39, 41, or 72. But I think they still need to invest in a draft at some point in a pass rusher and get someone that's more of a pure pass rusher, because Dayo Odegbo is not that.
Talking with 9-year NFL vet, CHSN Bears analyst Clay Harbor here on the Score Evening Show. All right, let's get into this draft now. And like you said, everybody was looking at interior offensive line before they did what they did through trades and free agency. Is there a position now that you're looking at that they have to address with that first round pick, or is the draft board sort of wide open and you take the best player available?
Man, I think it's wide open and you take the best player available. I heard some of the interviews with Ben Johnson today, and that's really what he's really saying is that's what they're looking for. And he says they don't even know who they're drafting yet. I believe it. You're still going through at this point. Some of the pre-draft visits are getting done. The pro days are wrapping up. You're going to have some private workouts. You're going to fly out. And I remember having a few private workouts. I had like 6 or 7 pre-draft visits. So it's still an interesting time. You're getting guys in the building. You're getting to know them. If you had a character question on a guy, maybe you're sitting down with them, breaking bread with them at dinner, and really figuring that out. But if I had to decide at where to go, you got to go with the best player available. I think you fix the trenches. Obviously, we know left tackle is okay. It's not great with Braxton. He's coming off of an injury. edge rusher, I just said, is a position of need. I don't think there's an edge rusher at 10 that really fits. Maybe you can go Mike Green. Maybe you can go James Pierce Jr. Maybe you can go Shamar Stewart. But I think that'd be a little bit of an overdraft at 10 if you could get back to maybe 16, 17, 18. Would feel more comfortable there because I think Abdul Carter is going to be gone. Mason Graham, if you trade up, maybe. I don't think he'll be there at 10. He's a guy, an interior pass rusher that's great. But once again, the interior at 10, I don't think's there. Maybe you take a playmaking running back like Ashton Jeanty. And I thought it was interesting hearing Ben Johnson talk today. They didn't see Jahmyr Gibbs as a running back when they drafted him at 12th overall when he was in Detroit. They said, we saw him as a playmaker. I don't think Ashton Jeanty is exactly a receiving threat playmaker, and that could be some gamesmanship from Ben Johnson, not trying to tip his cards there, but he is more of a strict running back, and I think he's great. I wouldn't be upset with that pick. I wouldn't be upset with the Tyler Warren pick at tight end because he's a guy that's very multiple too. You can put him in the backfield with some wildcat stuff, line him up in the slot. You can attach him. You can put him out wide. So there's just a vast array of places that they could take this pick, and I think they can't mess it up because there's going to be some really talented players and because the fact that they don't have to reach on a player because they really filled a lot of their needs. So now they're just going to be able to go best available, and that's the best way to draft.
You mentioned that Ben Johnson was sort of making the rounds today at the owners' meetings, and one thing that caught my eye, caught a lot of people's eyes, was him with Adam Hogue and talking about one player in particular, Penn State tight end Tyler Warren, and was more effusive in his praise of him and more specific in his praise of him than you'll hear a lot of head coaches be when talking about a draft prospect. I wanted you to hear this, Clay. Here's Ben Johnson earlier today talking about Penn State tight end Tyler Warren.
How much of you, the tight end position, watch Tyler Warren? Because when I've watched his film, I'm just thinking, and Ben Johnson must be thinking about all the different ways he could use this guy.
He's the definition of a football player.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did a cool little exercise a couple weeks ago with Ryan and Ian and Jeff Kings and myself and also the coordinator. So we had Dennis and we had Declan, and we watched a number of the call it 20 to 30 of the top prospects in this draft. Tyler got up there, and to me, what I'll always remember is Dennis Allen speaking up about how much of a headache it would be to go against a player like that.
Oh, wow.
Not only is he a tenacious football player, he blocks, he runs hard, but the fact that you could put him in the backfield and do some wildcat with him, he felt like that was kind of unique and would give him issues as a defensive coordinator.
Clay, how do you feel about Tyler Warren and how he would fit in with this Bears team, and how much would he help them in his rookie season?
Man, I came in with Marshall Harris and Layla Rahami last week. I came in studio and was talking draft with them. And I caught a little bit of grief for this. Some of the fans thought it was an interesting take, but I said I wouldn't be opposed to them taking Tyler Warren at 10, and for a lot of the same reasons why Ben Johnson just said he would be okay with it. And my reason is this. As a tight end, if you got a guy that can block and can run routes from the slot, even go in the backfield and line up outside, you're going to have to play him in base. And if you play him in base, he's going to be going one-on-one with a linebacker during a pass route, right? If you play him in nickel to stop the pass play, now in the run game, Tyler Warren is physical enough to where he can block the nickel off to the sidelines. He's a guy that's physical. And a nickel's not going to be able to tackle him one-on-one, so if you give him the ball, he runs so hard he's going to break tackles. So he is a mismatched nightmare. When I think about weapons, I think about Ben Johnson. He loves the multiplicity, the way you can line up in different formations, making the same things look different and the different things look the same. So for me, that's the perfect guy for a Ben Johnson-type system. And that's why I said that. I even like Colston Loveland, who's another big tight end for Michigan. But both those guys, I think, have high upside and would fit what Ben Johnson likes to do as an offensive coordinator.
Clay, I'm up against a break, but I wanted your thoughts on one quick thing before I let you go. I've been saying all offseason, what the Bears need more than anything is it's almost positionless. They need They need a game changer. They need a difference maker. They need a guy who can flip the field in a matter of one play. And that could be Ashton Jeanty at running back. That could be, you just talked about Tyler Warren. If they can move up and get an Abdul Carter or a pass rusher of that caliber, would you agree with that? That if you had to pinpoint one need, it wouldn't be one specific position, just one of those game breaker type of players at one of those any one of those premium positions.
Absolutely, and I think the reason I was drawn to Tyler Warren is this year, obviously, I don't think a wide receiver necessarily is going to be there. I don't think an edge rusher is necessarily going to be there at 10. But if you're looking at just a football player, a guy that's multiple, that can do a ton of different things, look at the guy that's got stats, a guy that's got traits like Tyler Warren. That's a guy that could really change some things for you, and I think that would make a lot of sense. But you're absolutely right. Find a guy that can just play football, make plays either side of the ball, and there are some needs you have, but you've really taken care of a lot of those in free agency, so get the best playmaker available, and I really think that's what they're going to do.
That's Clay Harbor. Catch him on CHSN Talking Bears, 9-year NFL vet. You can follow him on Twitter at ClayHarbs82. Clay, always appreciate the time and the insight, my man. Take care.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
That was in the weekend series there that you heard between the Yankees and the Brewers, and those bats were the talk of Major League Baseball this weekend after they used those bats to hit 3 home runs in 3 pitches to begin Saturday's game. 9 home runs in total in that game, 20 runs scored, and I believe 13 home runs over the course of that series with the Milwaukee Brewers using those torpedo bats, as they're calling them now. And like I said, everyone in Major League Baseball talking about that. It was 15 home runs, by the way. I was mistaken about those bats after that offensive outburst. And hey, man, I get it. It's something different, and it's a real interesting story as to how these bats came to be and how they ended up in the hands of multiple New York Yankees and a few other guys around the league. And it's all the brainchild of a MIT physicist turned coach and 2 years of his research and experimenting. His name is Aaron Leanhart, and he talked with The Athletic, and he simply explained what it is by saying, where are you trying to hit the ball? Where are you trying to make contact? And then he adds to that, he says, I think that's one of the cool things about sports is everyone is very competitive. And he talks about talking to players about this bat and the research that went into it. He says they're going to point to a location on the bat that is probably 6 or 7 inches down from the tip of the bat. That's where the sweet spot typically is. It's just through those conversations where you think to yourself, why don't we exchange how much wood we're putting on the tip versus how much we're putting in the sweet spot? That's the original concept right there. Just try to take all that excess weight and try to put it where you're trying to hit the ball. And then in exchange, try to take the thinner diameter that used to be at the sweet spot and put that on the tip. And it's really, he is an MIT physicist, okay? So it took some brains to come up with it. And like I said, 2 years of experimenting and fine-tuning and tweaking to get to this point. But when you think about it, when you think about what he just said there, it's kind of brilliant in its simplicity, what he's done with these torpedo bats. Instead of trying to hit the ball with a certain spot of the bat, they looked at and talked to players about where they are hitting the ball with the bat, and they moved the fat part to the part where they're most often making contact with the ball. It's taking wood from the place where they don't hit it that often and putting it in the place where they do hit it more often. And like I said, brilliant in its simplicity. If it works, that's the thing about this whole torpedo bat discussion that is driving me a little bit crazy, is everyone is acting like the whole game has changed. Everyone is acting like this is some evolution in bats and it's going to change the way baseball is played, or people are just screaming cheaters because it's the New York Yankees. Well, they're not cheating. For starters, they were working with Major League Baseball's rules department while they were developing this, and a Major League Baseball spokesperson told The Athletic that the bats don't break any rules. MLB Rule 3.02 states that a bat shall be a smooth round stick not more than 2.61 inches in diameter at the thickest part and not more than 42 inches in length. The bat shall be one solid piece of wood. The important part, the key part of that rule is not more than 2.61 inches in diameter. They don't specify where the fattest part of the bat is or has to be. They don't. They just tell you how fat the fattest part of the bat can be. So no rules were broken, and any team in baseball and any player in baseball could use these bats if they so choose. It's not something that the Yankees have like a trademark on. There's nothing proprietary about these bats for the Yankees. Anybody in baseball could use these if they wanted and if they think that they worked and are effective. But are we sure that they are? I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying, are we sure that they are? Because this is the world that we live in today where something like that happens and we all overreact and everybody has to have a real strong opinion one way or the other about the thing, whatever the thing is that we're talking about. Everybody has to have a real strong opinion, no matter how much or how little they or anybody knows about it. Yes, they hit 15 home runs, 9 in one game, 3 in 3 pitches to start Saturday's game. That's crazy. That's freakish. 4 of those home runs over the course of the weekend were off Aaron Judge's bat. He's just very large and good at hitting baseballs. He's not even using the torpedo bat. 2 of those home runs were in their game on Friday when neither off a torpedo bat, both landing in the short porch at Yankee Stadium. So that's 6 of the 15 home runs right there that had nothing to do with a torpedo bat. And if you dig a little deeper, you'll see that that Brewers pitching staff is really, really hurting right now. They're without 8 of their what would be opening day rostered pitchers between the starting rotation and the bullpen. And that's just a really good lineup that the Yankees throw out there on a day-to-day basis. Just MVP candidate after MVP candidate, or former MVP after former MVP, when you're talking about the likes of Cody Bellinger and Paul Goldschmidt and Aaron Judge and some of the other guys that they got there. Yes, the torpedo bat could have been a factor in all this. You know what else could have been a factor? Bad pitching and really good hitting. That also maybe played into it. Let's not be so quick to jump the gun, first of all, and accuse anyone of anything that they didn't do, because like I said, no rules were broken. But to just assume that these bats are gonna change baseball as we know it, and outcries of baseball has to do something about it. It's 3 games. It's a lot of home runs in 3 games, but it's 3 games. This is the sport where we all want large sample sizes, isn't it? Before we know anything about anyone or anything. Let's all slow down on the torpedo bat and how much it's going to change baseball and if it should be allowed or not. It might not be anything. That's a real possibility, that the torpedo bat has very little effect on how balls are hit or how often or how hard that they're hit. We'll see. Like I said, the guy's an MIT physicist. He might be onto something. But we just don't know that yet.